Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the board's second quarterly meeting. Call the meeting to order. And before we take roll, President Ransdell has some special recognition.
Mr. GQ here this morning.
All right.
Jay Todd, with all of his adventures in Poland and China and elsewhere this summer, will not be able to attend our June meeting, the meeting in which we will approve the budget next year. And so we want to take this opportunity to thank you for your service to you, the Vice President, the region, and all of your efforts in the last 2 years. In a rare circumstance where the student body president is re-elected for a second term. Congratulations on that. I hope you enjoy those with your travels, and I think that would work quite well with what you got on right now. Well done. Thank you, Jay Todd.
Thank you.
Scott Ransdell, Jay Todd's now a member of the WKU Alumni Association.
Well, there you go.
That's right.
Hey. There you go.
So that means 100% of our board is Alumni Association members. That is so cool.
Woo! Hey! All right.
I didn't know if you were doing some impromptu speaking, but I want to say a few things very quickly. It has been the honor of my lifetime to serve. Western Kentucky University has genuinely changed my life in every way. And truly, I do not believe there's any better real-life experience than being at the university together. It's been a pleasure getting to know you all. You'll see some letters and some envelopes in front of you, and I hope you guys can attend to that little event. It's truly been a pleasure, and I can't thank you all enough.
Thank you, Jay Cox.
We also introduce Andy Dahmer. Andy, stand up. Andy has just recently been elected SGA president and therefore the regent, student regent for next year. Andy, a little bit about Andy. She is a Cherry Presidential Scholar, which is as good as it gets in academic merit at WKU. She is kind of coasting through four majors. Economics, International Affairs, Spanish and Asian Religions and Cultures. She is a member of our Chinese flagship program. She was valedictorian at DuPont Manual High School and class president and a national merit finalist. And she was target number one in our recruiting class a couple of years ago. And we're so delighted to not only have her now leading our student body, but to be a member of this governing board. Congratulations, Andy.
Thank you.
We'll be sworn in a little bit earlier than normal in order to attend the June meeting and participate in actions taken at the June meeting as her term begins this summer.
Welcome, Andy. Anything else? We'll now proceed to roll call. Secretary Harris.
Regent Bell.
Present.
Regent Burt.
Here.
Chair Higdon.
Here.
Regent Henson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Here, present.
I thought you were here.
I didn't hear my
Regent
name.
Johnson.
Here.
Regent McKinney.
I don't know.
Is he not here?
He didn't
hear me.
Oh.
She only got me out for
Regent Porter. Am I not speaking?
He's separated.
Regent Ritchie.
Here.
Regent Ridley.
Here.
And Regent Smith.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have 11 represented. We have a quorum.
Having all of us here, full board. Legal to conduct business. Next, turn to approval of the minutes from our January 27th first quarterly meeting. They have been distributed to you electronically. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes?
I move approval.
Motion by Regent Johnson for approval.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Ritchie. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Passes unanimously. To our committee of reports or items, I will read the normal consent agenda statement. The Committees of the board met on March 24th to discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for action, with the exception of those designated under each committee. The next turn to our first committee, Academic Affairs, Regent Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we have a bit of a rarity this morning. We have only one active item, AA1, which was discussed thoroughly at our March committee meeting, and I entertain any further discussion concerning the approval of school engineering and applied sciences. If no further discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Like sign. Motion passes. I would like to ask Provost Lee to present a brief information item.
I do have a bit of a follow-up on a program that you all know is in process of being created here at WKU, and that's our brewing and distilling program. So we have a present for each of you this morning from the brewing and distilling program. It's bread.
That's got to be good.
It's bread made from the spent grains of the brewing process. So in a very real sense, it's a symbol not only of the way this program is working, but the institution's commitment to sustainability. And it also seemed to be a kind of politically correct gift that we could give you in this particular setting. So please enjoy it.
Bridget Ridley, the Academic Committee.
Yeah, you all just keep coming up with
Mr. Chairman, that's
thank you, Regent. That is fantastic. It
keeps coming.
We next turn to the Finance and Budget Committee, Regent Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're right. I don't know what to do. Can I just stop now while I'm ahead? We've got six action items on the agenda, and the first five, FB1 through 5, were presented and discussed at our March 24th committee meeting. So I'd like to know if there's anyone that would like to remove them from consent agenda, either the ones 1 through 5. Now, I think there is one announcement on, is it FB 4 or 5 on the personnel changes? Was there a change or an addition, a correction of an error, David?
Yes.
Yeah, it's
correction of the promotion and tenure.
Right.
Yes. Gail Malinger in the Department of Social Work, which I think on your minutes as or on your materials says only for promotion, but she is for promotion and tenure. And since she won the university's public service award last night, we definitely want to promote her.
Okay. Well, that would be the only change of a correction from the committee meeting. So I'll ask again, does anybody want to remove any of those items 1 through 5 from the consent agenda? If not, I'll entertain then a motion to approve finance and budget action items number 1 through 5.
So moved.
I'll second.
Oh, I had got to get a motion first. Oh, you
I'm
did?
I'm sorry,
okay.
Jason did.
All right.
I'm sorry, he's just quiet.
I'm sorry. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion in the presentation? Discussion on those items? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Action items 1 through 5 have been approved. I'll now turn to action item number 6. And I guess what's the procedure, Dr. Capps? Should we proceed with a motion and then discussion?
Right.
Okay. Action item number 6. I'm paging through everything here, trying to find my stuff. Is approval of the 2017-18 tuition and mandatory student fee schedules. It appears on pages 8 through 10 of the materials that were handed out, and I will now entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Regent McKinnon and second Regent Hinson. And I'll turn it over for discussion and presentation.
Thank you. Good morning. We just have a few items this morning to cover. Since the committee meeting, the Council on Postsecondary Education approved the maximum parameters as it relates to setting resident undergraduate tuition rates for next academic year. The process includes them setting the maximum parameter, this board approving tuition, all tuition and fee rates, and then us submitting it back to the CPE for official approval based on their statutory responsibility. So what you have in your agenda materials today, I believe it's page 10, is our request for approval of the mandatory tuition and fees schedule for next year. The resident undergraduate rate is consistent with the CPE's recommendation that our rate not go up more than 3% next year. As the agenda item states, there's a goal on the part of the CPE to close the gap between the comprehensive universities. That gap happened when boards had some of their own tuition setting authority, more authority than they do now. And we made some strategic decisions to make some investments by doing especially mid-year tuition increases. So that's basically why there is the gap, and the CPE over multiple years, no indication of how quickly that their intent is to, I don't know if they'll ever be uniform, but they'll be closer together. So that explains why our tuition rate increase will be less than, for example, I think you may have seen Murray State approve theirs and EKU approve theirs recently. So ours is $145 a semester, actually a 2.9% increase to be exact, but we'll round it off to approximately 3%. The other rates altogether, we have significant flexibility to determine what we think are market appropriate rates. The one they focus on is the resident rate for undergraduate students. Our rate setting has been in a lot of way formulaic. It's typical for us to set the non-resident rate at 2.5 times the in-state rate. There is some expectation that non-residents pay more than residents, because you think that they should be closer to paying their cost of education and not subsidized by the state. The lower tuition rate for residents is an indication of state funding allows us to have a lower rate. So the non-resident rate is typically 2.5 times the in-state rate. We are making a change as it relates to the incentive rate in conversations with admissions. We want to be able to have a rate that's easy to market. And right now we had a rate that says, oh, it's approximately 30% higher than the in-state rate. Well, it sounds relatively straightforward. It's probably not the best and easiest marketing strategy for going after these students. So over several years, what we're going to be able to do is move to being able to say that the incentive rate is just half of the non-resident rate. So that's a strategy that we are trying to implement over several years. The graduate rates and the doctoral rates are all premised on assessments with the provost and the deans about how to best position those programs in the market for recruiting the best students. So what you see is some variances among the doctoral programs, but again, decisions are made on a programmatic basis. That's why you see the doctorate in physical therapy at the same rate for next year as it is this year, an assessment that's to position the program effectively. The on-demand rate
is a function of what we set for the respective resident rates for undergraduate and graduate. Several of these rates, we have no choice. Active military is determined externally, and we agree to participate in that program. So that rate remains constant. That's the general nuts and bolts of how we determined the tuition recommendation, the tuition rate recommendations for you. May I answer any questions?
Barbara?
Dr. Birch?
Maybe a question and comment, and I realize it is what it is. I have some concern about what's happening on our graduate domestic non-resident. I mean, this is for more than 1 year now. The increases there are significantly greater. I understand the effort to want to pull it all together. But the fact is, we've got a pretty limited graduate assistant support budget anyway, and we have almost nothing for master's level students. And so we really are positioning ourselves, I think, to have less and less non-resident domestic student in master's programs. I just think we really need to pause and revisit that before another year rolls around and see if that's really what we want to do. I know some are hurting more than others, but I think that's important. The other thing I wonder about is on our distance learning and what we might look at down the road that lets distance learning be a part of an undergraduate, a residential student's experience without costing more. Because I think we're going to come to the point where it's just the norm. And so those two things, if we could at least take a look at implications and see what could be done.
Any other questions or comments?
There is one,
yes, sir.
Thought that I would want to report on. It's not part of the schedule, but it is something we're studying, and Provost and I have had a conversation this week. There is a desire on the part of Dr. Sally Ray on our Glasgow campus to have a pilot project right now, I'm thinking maybe 3 semesters, fall, spring, and the following fall of 18, where a couple of existing certification programs, 15-hour course sequences to get a certificate in a particular academic discipline. She would like to experiment with offering those certification programs on the Glasgow campus at the KCTCS rate. There is a new work-ready scholarship that's being implemented in Kentucky this fall that offers a scholarship to students in certain certification programs that pays not up to the KCTCS rate, but it gets much closer than certainly the margin between that scholarship and our tuition rate. Sally believes that there are a couple of these existing certification programs for which there would be a strong market in the Glasgow area. And she would like to have a pilot project to offer those certification programs at the KCTCS rate to allow that work-ready scholarship to better come into play for those particular programs. I don't know how that will go, but I'm inclined to let her run with that and to see how that works. And I don't know whether that would require board action or not, but it's something that we're contemplating right now, and we'll do the research, and if it's something that looks like it would require board action, we'll come back to you. But right now, I'm inclined to let her run that pilot project and see, and right now those students are not enrolled with us, and if enrolling with us at the KCTCS rate and getting this work-ready scholarship, which would make their margin fairly small to pay for these courses, it could have an economic development impact in Glasgow and Barron County. So that's an FYI only at this point. And we haven't made a decision yet, but we're studying it. And I want to give our regional chancellors every opportunity, because they've lost a lot of mainly part-time adult learners on our regional campuses. And I want to give them every opportunity to strengthen their enrollments and grow their programs to the extent possible. So. FYI,
Mr. Chairman, may I ask the President a question?
Sure.
what is the downside? That seems a positive. I mean, that seems as positive. Workforce development. The university is educating a broader base.
I agree. The one downside could be, and David and I are talking about this this week and well for the next few days. Currently, students on our main campus are paying the WKU tuition rate for the same certification programs. So if you discount them,
where's it stop?
Take them on the Glasgow campus. I don't want to do anything that would lessen the enrollment in those programs on the main campus because they're discounted in Glasgow. That may be part of the experiment. So there could be some unintended consequences in that regard. We're trying to sort through that. That may or may not be a significant variable, and there could be other. We're trying to sort through any other. Are there other unintended consequences that could come about? We won't research it to death, but she'd like to go on and get started because that work-ready scholarship, those candidates have to be in the pool by July 15, I believe it is. So it's something that would have to move fairly quickly if it was to be done.
What's the difference between ours and the KCTCS?
Well, KCTCS rate is, I can't tell you the exact dollar number, but I'm guessing it's probably 70% of our tuition rate. That's a guess. Yeah. Brian, would you have a sense of that? Chris, you work with the transfer center.
Their rate is about half of ours.
It's about half of ours. Yeah. So less than I thought. So it's about half of ours. So it'd be a significant discount on those certification program enrollments.
And we'd have to match, to get that scholarship, we have to match exactly to what the cost would be?
No. The students would apply for the scholarship if they enroll in these certification programs, and it's my understanding that these two programs that they're studying do qualify for the criteria for this work-ready scholarship. So they'll get the scholarship, then they'll pay us. They're equal to the KCTCS rate. So we wouldn't be involved in the work-ready scholarship. They apply for that, get it, and then that pays for much of their rate if it's the KCTCS rate rather than our traditional rate. We haven't decided yet, but anyway, I just wanted the board to be aware of that, particularly if that becomes something that gets some energy.
I had a long conversation with Sally this week, and she's very excited about the possibility with economic development and tying that with this. So she's about it.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about a fee.
About what?
About a fee.
Go ahead.
Okay. My understanding for the parking structure fee is that it has a sunset clause.
It does.
When is that date?
When the bonds are retired.
Okay.
But don't push me into it, as I don't remember the exact year. But
one of your bonds.
Yeah, I just didn't remember. We sold the bond 2 years ago, so I didn't want to get quoted as when the sunset was. But yes, I'm aware of it. The chief financial officer is aware of it. And as I retire, I will leave it in a folder for whoever comes in after me, just because there'll be some folks that won't remember that.
Sure.
But we'll continually pass the baton.
Persist until those bonds are paid off and your
current debt is met. We're having that conversation.
So yes, you're absolutely right that the board took that action, and we'll make sure that that's honored sometime down the road.
But the fee does not disappear when the structure is complete. Correct. It's when the bonds are paid off.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's an important distinction.
Yes.
Yeah, we have a debt that it ties us up for 20 years.
And I think that's set forth.
Great thing too. The Glasgow campus has lost about 200 students to the nursing program through KCTCS. So that's just one of the examples where the KCTCS dynamic hits home.
Some of that is also due to us phasing out the associate degree in nursing and KCTCS. That's a core degree program at the associate degree level in nursing. So yeah, that price point and the phasing out of that program has taken a toll in Glasgow.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good example of the challenge that universities like ours have going forward, whether it's online course from Phoenix or whatever, but challenging times, to say the least.
If I could... Just, I want to respond to something that Ann said to you. There are commitments that are made to bondholders in these type of transactions, so that fee has to stay in there, but it does go at the end of the term. There's a covenant there that we have to proceed with.
Now, in a very optimistic environment of enrollment growth, any surplus revenue is held for future bond payments, and we can always revisit to see if we can retire debt earlier.
Yeah, you have redemption commitments, correct?
That'll be an option that we'll monitor as WKU grows.
Any further questions, or Barbara? Anybody? John?
But
any further questions or anything?
David had my ear. I'm sorry.
I just have a question. Well, hearing no further discussion or questions, then I'll call for the vote. All in favor of the motion on FB number 6, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion carries. Let's see. We got an information item, and this will be the fiscal year 2018 budget development update.
Yes. We're prepared to bring you a budget today, but I do have some notes to give you an update where we are on budget development. When the budget will be approved at your June board meeting, and we'll have plenty of opportunity to give you more detail on the budget. So we're in what we call the production phase. People working hard to actually prepare the budget. When you get a book, it looks pretty simple, but there's a lot of complexities to be able to pull it together. So at this point, we have finalized revenue estimates for next year. We've projected our fixed cost increases. We've also are in the process of allocating. This budget will include the 1%, fully funding the 1% salary increase that occurred in January, and then the 1% that will go into effect July 1. So we're making sure that all the departmental budgets reflect those allocations. I anticipate that you'll be looking at a budget of approximately $400 million, which is about what the fiscal year 17 budget is, and that's one reason that you've got a sequential things that you need to cover is, one, that you approve the tuition rates. The tuition rates are a key variable in us being able to develop a budget. So I have some preliminary numbers, assuming that you were going to approve those tuition rates today. So what I'm going to address for the next couple of minutes is the central budget, not the total budget, not the amount of revenue that, in fact, is returned to the divisions for various operating purposes. The central budget includes the fall and spring rate increase, and we estimate how much that increase will be. We determine whether there's any projected increase in state funding. Yes, there will be. So the next budget includes a state equity allocation. Equity allocation was intended by the General Assembly to achieve some comparability in state funding among the universities, in recognition that Northern Kentucky University and WKU, in fact, grew earlier and state funding didn't follow. So we have approximately $2.3 million that will be in our budget for the first time in fiscal year 18, of which we have taken that amount and committed it to the salary increases that I just mentioned. We have a slight increase in state performance funding for next year, as President Ransdell has already shared with you, that we were more successful than the amount of money that went into the pool. We're going to draw more out of the pool because of our performance. As a typical next step in the budget process, after we determine what our increase is for tuition and state funding, We have finalized our projected fixed costs, and as a second part would be, what strategic investments do we really need to make, even with limited resources, to move the institution forward? I'll first address your typical fixed cost increases. For returning regents, many of these will be routine to you. Faculty promotions. We will have to put additional money into the retirement system. What happens in the retirement system, rate increase? The increase is large in the first year and rather modest in the second. It's been a pattern. The health insurance increase. We increased health insurance January 1. We operate a health insurance plan, our self-funded health insurance plan, on a calendar year. We take one-time money and fund the January to June. We come back in July and retro, we fully fund the health insurance increase. We have some adjustments at the federal level as it related to withholdings and FICA. We have a small increase in utilities because of a little more square footage in the new science campus due to the new building. Unfortunately, when the state makes budget reduction decisions, it can impact other entities outside of Frankfort. That happened with student accessibility. I'm not sure if it's the Department of Voc Rehab, or is it Voc Rehab that did it? So we need to fully fund our student accessibility program, and I believe this is the budget that provides accommodations, whether it's hearing impaired. Is that correct? I'm looking to the experts. So that we have about $175,000 that will be necessary to continue those mandated services, even though the state funding to make those accommodations is not forthcoming. We have some contractual obligations. Contractual obligations normally relate a lot to your IT software, the Blackboard system that's integral to the campus. It can also include items like elevator contracts and garbage disposal and things like that. So it's a broad array of contracts that it's not unusual to have some sort of inflationary increase. But these are services that you cannot do without. We have some insurance adjustments. The biggest fixed cost increase, I'll just spend a minute on this one, and I'll again cover this when we talk about the budget in June. The biggest fixed cost increase is still related to student financial assistance and our merit scholarships. So over the last couple of years, we talked about what looked like a runaway train. The good news was is that students were taking our scholarships, but we didn't have a cap on them. And if you met these qualifications, high qualifications, we awarded you our top scholarships. Well, we're in, I think this would be, Dr. Meredith, is this our second year of restructuring our scholarship program more to an award and limit the number of awards? But we need to honor our commitment to those students that came in under the old program. So right now, we still have a large increase. It's approximately $2.6 million for scholarships next year. I anticipate at some point in a few years, you won't see such a large increase because we're honoring that commitment to former students that came in under your package includes tuition and fees, room and board. And if the cost went up for those packages, we honored that, and their scholarship award would increase. So those students are graduating, moving, progressing towards graduation, and at some point we will have our students on the new scholarship package. I believe at some point you have or will receive a card that outlines what our merit awards look like. When I talk about student financial assistance, it's not just our merit scholarships. This increase has maybe $200,000 for the mandated scholarships. What we mean by mandated is that's where the state says for a certain group of populations, whether it's war orphans or university employees at other campuses, allowed to attend our campus at no cost. So as tuition rates go up, we fund an increase in a scholarship program that allows them to attend here based on all of these are statutorily based. The last item is some additional fixed cost increases related to operating that you would anticipate on auditing and legal. The as I indicated with the state equity money, we're pleased that we will be bringing forward a budget that does have a salary increase next year for full-time regular employees. Now, the other category I told you about is strategic commitments. What are we doing to continue moving the institution forward? What investments should we make with limited dollars that are necessary for the type of growth that we do want? In this category, we have growing private giving support, where we invest in development and alumni relations. Many of these items will, across these categories that I'm going to name, a lot of them are technology-driven, where we're finding out social media and technology is helping us reach new populations in more effective ways. So we want to grow our private giving support consistent with our current strategic plan, and obviously that'll be revisited in the next year or so. We need to invest in student recruitment and retention initiatives. So we have studied some options that will allow us to make some changes, purchase some software. Again, a lot of these have to do with social media, reaching parents more effectively. And we're studying what other institutions have done that is effective and what we probably ought to implement. That describes in a lot of ways the investment we want to make in student retention and professional advisors. Maybe at a previous meeting you heard that was the direction we were going to go. We brought someone in, probably several individuals in, that said one of the ways to improve your student retention is you have to make a better investment and reach the students sooner, reach the students that are transferring, and better serve their needs. So our student retention and professional advisors will in fact include 5 professional senior transition advisors and another transfer advisor. And we believe that while I can't tell you a timeline for when we will see results, but it's an investment that's needed, and these types of initiatives will position us in a better position for earning our performance funding going on. As Dr. Ransdell has briefed you on performance funding, there's progression variables, there's graduation variables. So these types of investments back into enrollment management will allow us to move the needle on retention and graduation. We feel strongly that both of them are needed. A couple of other items we were trying to do in this budget process is to identify some things that are funded with one-time money, put them on base budget because they have been on one-time money for a significant number of years, and we feel confident that it's appropriate to have them no longer an issue as to how we fund them. I wish I could say that we didn't have to invest in legal fees, but it's a reality, and it's no real crystal ball as to what our actual costs will be. But we believe we need to invest back into securing a permanent budget for legal services so that we are not coming back to one-time funds and having to routinely fund it. Also in the category of one-time funding that needs to be permanently funded, we have events on campus that require both extra hours from our WKU Police Department as well as some events that require state police to assist us. I'm not exactly sure what we're doing for the Eclipse event. But as you hear more about the Eclipse event, it may be required that anyone that ranks as a police officer for miles may be necessary to be on this campus, given the projection of the volume of people will be here. But that is the cost of doing business when you're a large, comprehensive university and reach out to this community, and we want them here. We want them on our campus. that those are the strategic commitments and the fixed cost increases. Unfortunately, the projected tuition revenue is not, and the state appropriation funding is not quite enough to cover that short list. So the difference between the projected revenue available and the expenditures I've just described is approximately $1.4 million. It's a manageable number, and we have prorated that reduction or reallocation back to the divisions, and when we bring you a budget, it will have a reallocation plan in order to have a balanced budget as it relates to covering our fixed cost increases. The this budget that we are going to bring you will in fact reflect more realistic enrollment numbers. Now, I'm not saying that before that we bought, you know, this has been contentious in some arenas. Did I bring you or did we bring you a budget that wasn't realistic? No. It's a crystal ball. It's a forecast. It's the best diagnostics we have. We look at admissions to date. We look at enrollment to date. We assess numerous variables. We assess that we have been for years investing in growing our enrollment in hopes that the yield would happen. But there are circumstances beyond our ability to forecast that has left us coming back to you with some tuition shortfalls. This budget will be more realistic as it relates to a forecast included in that $400 million budget. So the central budget reflects enrollment that we believe is achievable. We may be able to come back and say we need expenditure authority for additional dollars, and that would be quite welcome. To the degree that is in any budget that we don't reach the forecast, we come back to you and tell you that we normally find some one-time money that will allow us not to finish the year in a deficit. What this budget does not do, but it's a very strategic decision, is it doesn't address the $6.5 million or 4% shortfall in enrollment this year. It addresses it on the revenue side. We're adjusting the tuition estimate. But on the expenditure side, you're not going to see a reallocation plan that says this is how we will have a balanced budget. We will have a budget line that allows us, called a budget reduction reserve. We'll have a budget reduction reserve that says that the budget's balanced, but we're recognizing on the revenue side that this is a very important decision on the expenditure side. We want a very strategic process with Dr. Caboni that allows us not to make prorated allocations for reallocation back to the division, but says let's press the pause button, revisit our priorities, and make some strategic decisions about how this budget ought to be balanced. We will have one-time money to ensure that we will not finish the fiscal year in a deficit. But we are going to have a variable in this budget that's different than any other budget we've brought to you. And again, I'm going to cover some of these things in more detail when we come back in June. So we do know that budget declined this year. In a normal budget process, we would have allocated that amount back out to the divisions. Rather than doing that, we're going to bring you a recommendation that says, let's make some strategic decisions about how we implement this reallocation in the FY19 budget. And let's use one-time money that will accrue centrally, and will be as a result of a revised carry forward policy, and use one-time money in order to have a balanced budget. What this will also do is not force us to make reductions across campus in the event that we actually see more students next fall, next spring, than we project. So that number that we have in a budget reduction reserve can change as we see improved yields, improved retention, but allow the new president to make some strategic decisions about how, in fact, to have a balanced budget moving forward. Now, I know I've thrown a lot at you quickly, and again, I'll be able to go into more detail, and we'll reach out to some of you as you, especially on the Finance and Budget Committee, need to understand more details about a balanced budget moving forward.
And I think there were some questions, and John, you got my attention first. Did you?
Well, a couple of observations. First of all, I appreciate you saying statutory required when you were talking about unfunded mandates.
Yes.
But I think the reality of this is that when the legislators make a decision to give free tuition to whoever, it doesn't matter the circumstances, that it is an increase in the cost of all other students, because that revenue has to be picked up somewhere. So when we talk about the CPE allowing us to go up in to the maximum, that factor has to be in, because these unfunded mandates come to us with no revenue source. And again, as citizens, not just board members, we need to tell our legislators and reinforce that. What is the number that we have to make up?
It's approximately $200,000, and it's attached to growth in the mandated programs.
In total?
Oh no, what is our total unfunded mandate each year? It's about $6 million, isn't it?
Well, let's see.
It's about $6 million, but some of those aren't statutorily required. Some of those are sons and daughters of employees, 50% discount. So some of those are ours.
It's approximately $5 million. It was close. And it's going up another $200,000. That reflects the tuition rate increase and an increased participation.
Well, let's bring this a little more closer to home. Here we're struggling to try to find a couple of million dollars to fund salaries for our highly qualified faculty and staff, and yet we've got a $5 million issue that the legislators are saying you need to give away free tuition. I mean, at some point we have to push them harder to say, you got to stop doing this or fund it. I've had that discussion many times, and this is the time to talk about it. And thank you very much for pointing that out. A question on the legal fee side. Are you talking about budgeting unforecasted type things? Are you talking about going to a retainer system versus...
No change. All I'm trying to do is recognize that for several years, the budget required for our legal services contract has not been adequately funded. And what that does is then requires us to identify one-time money on at the end of the fiscal year on a repeated basis. So there's been enough track record that we need to put approximately $80,000 more into the legal budget that hasn't been increased for quite some time in some hope that was not going to be a needed cost.
Thank you.
Time to answer. Barbara?
I want to piggyback on John's question about the unfunded mandates. It just occurs to me that in some ways the greater the attractiveness of a campus and its programs, the more likely you are to have enrollments.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious as to, mm-hmm, have we ever taken a look or have any idea of the degree to which we have unfunded mandates compared to other campuses?
That's a good point.
In the statutorily required, what you'll see is universities that have a KCTCS institution in close proximity are more likely to have greater costs, because one of the largest components in the mandated is that other university employees, I believe they have to be full-time university employees, but other university employees can, KCTCS, college, the technical schools, the universities, can attend at any public university. So you'll see a slight increase for those institutions that have those type of institutions in closer proximity.
Staff at Sky CTC can take courses here.
Yeah,
at no cost, and so you multiply that across the state, 16 community and technical colleges. plus there's a to answer your question, I don't know the exact number, if we can research that, but we spend more on unfunded mandates than most of the other campuses. I don't know whether we spend more than UK or not, but probably not. But, there's a range of half a dozen different mandates for sons and daughters of veterans, sons and daughters of first responders. I couldn't name
firefighters and war orphans. And
war orphans. That General Assembly enacts, and in my 20 years, they've never appropriated money to support those. But it's a hard thing to overturn because the General Assembly, it's politically difficult to go back and take something away once they've enacted it. We spend a lot of money on unfunded legislatively authorized mandates.
Mr. President, I in no way want anybody to interpret that. Right. My passion for those individuals are... I have that. I'm just saying that if we're going to give money to anything, we have to figure out where it comes from and how it's be funded. And just to automatically say we're going to do this and you all figure it out, I think is a very shallow way to approach education in general.
I agree. We usually have that discussion most every legislative session. Robin's not here, but normally, it's an ongoing pressure point that we need to continue to address.
Our governmental relations staff has been very effective explaining that, so that we have not had any new mandates for several biennial sessions. So there have not been new ones, even though new ones added to the list, because it's very easy to feel sympathetic for a certain population and want to say, well, maybe we can help you. I'm pleased that the legislators have not added any new ones to the list. I understand your point. Are there any other questions I may answer today?
Just a comment on it, and it was a very helpful explanation, and I appreciate you going into so much detail. And just a comment that I mentioned to Gary about. It's clear that our current budgeting policies have to be revisited, and I think the plan is laid out for it. But I'd like to make a suggestion that hopefully Dr. Anfield of the Administrative Council might consider. I know we've announced a change in policy on carry forward, but a policy is usually the result of a fairly well-defined plan that we think we're committed to. Seems like it is a drastic change on carry forward. We've had for the last two decades a generous, decentralized carry forward that I think has allowed us to get a good many initiatives off the ground. And I know we can't keep going that route. But the way it's presented as a policy on carry forward suggests that we're dramatically going from generous carry forward to a totally decentralized to a totally centralized carry forward. And I don't think that's probably where we're going to end up. You said let's hit the pause button. Let's figure out what we're going to do. The new president will have plans. I would respectfully suggest that you call it what it is, that it is a transitional plan. It's clear what the purpose of it is, but it's also clear it's going to change. And just for people to come back and all of a sudden you've gone from describing it as centralized, decentralized to centralized is a dramatic philosophical shift. I think it would serve us well. It's going to be tough enough to work through it, but I think it would serve us well to label it as a transitional plan. We're going to follow it and let the policy flow out of it once there's a chance to find out what it's going to look like for the next year. I think it would make a difference in intent.
Well, certainly be in a position for it to be reevaluated. But the big driver of changing the policy is we have to have a secure base budget. To the degree that, I don't know that we would have considered changing it had we had growing enrollment.
But I'm suggesting, I'm not suggesting changing the plan in. I'm suggesting just don't call it a policy. when it is a transitional plan and we haven't thought it through yet. We know it's
something. Barbara and I have discussed this. It's not quite that simple. We have a policy manual that has several dozen policies in it. Some of those come through the University Senate, some approved by the Administrative Council. There are a number of ways in which policies make their way into our policy manual. And the change in the policy for carry forward funds to include revenue dependent programs was done to ensure that next year's budget will be balanced, even if we have to draw on carry forward funds, including revenue dependence. And that will allow President Comboni to know that there is a mechanism through which the budget next year will be balanced while he leads a process to engage in a strategic plan, which would certainly include perhaps a different budget model. But no one knows that yet. So I'm hesitant to create a new language in the university's policy manual that makes one policy transitional, because that could be quite a precedent for all the other policies in that policy manual. What makes this one transitional and this one not? I'd rather President Comboni understand that this was done to ensure a balanced budget next year, and it, like a lot of policies, will be under review as the university engages in a strategic planning process. And I met with him yesterday. He's very much aware that this is in place. He's grateful for the confidence that there's a mechanism to have a balanced budget next year while the university engages in a budget assessment process. So I understand exactly the point you're making, and I agree that it may not stay in place, but like every policy in that policy manual is only good for today. Every policy can be changed tomorrow by the University Senate or the Administrative Council or whoever the authorizing body is for each of those policies. Some are put in place by this governing board. So I understand the point you're making, well taken, that will be well communicated, but I'm hesitant to go in and create that formal precedent of calling a particular policy transitional. I think that is a, we should proceed very cautiously in that regard, given the complexities of, because then that creates a discussion, every policy going forward. Well, is this permanent or is this transitional? A policy is a policy until it's changed. And this one will likely be changed, but I don't want to formalize that to say that it's only for 1 year.
I want to respond, please, okay? I understand your position. I still would like you to consider it. The fact is that this is dated April 6th when we announced this policy. It goes into effect July 1. And when you look at what we've been doing for years, Dr. Ansell, we've done exactly this. We've used carry forward to balance the budget. So we're not doing anything different. We're going to do it anyway. The only thing we're doing different is formalizing as a policy centralization of carry forward. And centralization carries by implication a lot of messages. I don't really even see why we needed it, quite frankly, but the fact is, we haven't affected any policy manuals yet, and it just seems drastic to go from decentralization to centralization. It's a very different message. The message to campus is, and I have full confidence in our administrative leaders to do everything they can to not damage the support people need to do their work. But the first time next fall that someone asked to present at a meeting about a piece of equipment in a centralized budget, technically that means you got to get permission to spend the money. I know we're not going to be that arbitrary, but the spirit of this is not to be a centralized budget campus. It's to just pause, as Ann said, and buy a little time. I think it's an important message. I won't say any more about it, but you have the power to make it a policy in a matter of a month or two. So in a matter of a few weeks, we could make it a transitional plan. I hope you'll think about it.
Thank you. We will. But I would suggest that I would be cautious about going to a centralized budget, because the carry forward policy, the only change is carry forward will be used to balance the budget next year if there is a deficit. but anything beyond what's used to balance that budget is returned back to the division, and then we continue that carry forward fund, and we generally carry forward $30 to $35 million a year in carry forward funds. So if we need $8-10 million, I don't know, because 6.5 will continue into next year that we're addressing this spring. That's a reasonable course of action to ensure that we have a balanced budget, but most of the carry forward will remain in the divisions. So we're not fully removing the opportunity to use carry forward funds for expenditures across the divisions. So I understand the point you're making. I will factor that into the conversation going forward.
May I answer any other questions?
Thank you, Ann. Okay. Chairman, that concludes the Finance and Budget Committee report.
Thank you, Regent Johnson. We're approaching the 10 o'clock hour. Do you want to take a short break?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's affirmative.
We'll take a short break. Let's try to hold it to 10 minutes or less.
10 and 20.
Sorry.